Hello and welcome to the Legendary Frogcast. I'm your host, Joseph Blanchett, and this is actually a part of my other podcast, the Legendary Frogcast Play D&D Together, where we play D&D. It's a review of Waterdeep Dragon Heist, one of the official Wizard modules. We did this review podcast right after we completed our campaign over on the other channel. So it has myself, as Mark, which has been on the show many times, as Bun, who's been on a few times, and two newcomers, Steph and Sam, who are friends of mine, who played in the campaign with us. So enjoy this review of Waterdeep Dragon Heist. If you're interested in listening to the games, you can check out the Legendary Frogcast Play D&D Together over on anchor.fm/lfrogdnd. You can also find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/josephblanchett. But, yep, enjoy this review of Waterdeep Dragon Heist, and, enjoy it. Hope you like it. Bye-bye. Well, with that, let's, go directly into, our podcast.
Yeah.
About the adventure.
Oh, yeah! Like you know, I have been playing D&D and RPG since first edition, back with the original Redbox. And this is actually the first full campaign that I actually played to completion, with the group disbanding or something.
That's great, and it is a short campaign. It's for 4 to 5 levels, but no, it's still great. We got what 20 some odd sessions in that. I'm sorry, Joe. You should probably do your normal podcast introduction thing.
And I guess you were technically part of the entire Dragon of Icefire Peak, so this will be your first, like, all the way through.
Yeah, well, plus it's getting continuations, so until the end coming up, I don't really technically consider that the end of the campaign.
And, technically, it's Dragon of Icefire Peak, but hello and welcome to the Legendary Frogcast. I am your host, Joseph Blanchett. And with me, who, you know, we've been actually talking for about an hour now, is Mark Strider.
Hello.
We got Bun here.
Hello.
And my first time officially, like, on the podcast, we got my friends Sam and Steph.
Hello.
Hello. We're from Canada.
Yeah.
What? No.
When did this happen?
Surprise, eh?
Yeah. And we're doing this like right after we officially conclude our Dungeons & Dragons Waterdeep Dragon Heist game. And we're just going to talk a little bit about the adventure and what we felt about it, how we felt about it, and share some feelings, stuff like that.
So if I may start with the feelings, I want to say this is probably the best group I've ever DM'd as, like, an adventure group. Like, I have fun with other friends and things like that, and other games I do, and this is, I think, the first one that had, like, the perfect balance of roleplay and gameplay that, like, hits my preference. So thank you all for like, having silly voices, thought-out characters, a little bit of backstory, and the ability to know where to move your character during combat.
Well, because one thing I told Sam and Steph, like, since they're kind of new to D&D in this way, I said, like, this isn't your standard, like, go into a dungeon where, like, a warrior and a paladin and a bard, like, going on an adventure. Like, this is, like, an urban environment. From what I understand, it takes, like, we're just kind of normal people for the most part, unless, I know you can play it any way you want, but I was thinking it's like, we're not necessarily adventurers, so let's pick something, like, unusual that will fit into this setting.
Ragtag bunch.
Yeah.
Motley Crue.
So,
that's just Sharptooth.
Steph and Sam, like, what kind of characters did you, in case, like, people didn't listen to the all 22 episodes, what kind of characters did he make?
So my name is Steph, and I made Brutrick the monk character. He's monk bugbear, because I was originally going to do the tortoise type monk because of Kung Fu Panda, but then I found out about bugbears, how long their arms are, and I thought that was so funny. I had to pick that, and it also seemed it was against type because bugbears are more chaotic and aggressive seeming and bullies, and so to make him a really kind of like lazy monk who like compulsively needed to help people while being clumsy, it just felt like a lot of fun.
It's a very good, like, gentle giant sort of feel to it, Andre the Giant type thing.
Bugbears are traditionally, you know, the bad guys.
Yes.
And one thing I know D&D is trying to get away from, but you just can't really get away from it in old adventures, is that these monster races aren't necessarily always, like, the bad guys or corrupted by evil. There can be, you know, there can be a big doofy bugbear who's just really clumsy.
And he always wants to give it free hugs.
Free hugs. And Sam, with like Sharptooth, you decided to, you're saying, I wanted to be like a rock star.
Yeah, so Sam with Sharptooth is, I'm learning bass guitar right now. And so I was like, oh, this would be funny if I put that into the character I was doing. And why the goblin is, I find that I like drawing just doodling goblins. So it's very much like for the aesthetic. But then I want it to be like old, run down, just to, like a very much a has-been, because I thought that'd be really fun to play like a very oblivious character. Because
there were some great lines during the campaign of just Sharptooth just being that. That I think it's going to take a while for me to forget, if ever.
Sharptooth. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I remember talking to Mark about, with the character, because how like blunt and oblivious he is, I could progress the game if there's ever like a pause in it, or just say very like bluntly, like, well, I guess we're going to go, like, just whatever needed to get done without the storyteller having to say it, but it seemed very much still in character, because that's what the person would do. And I thought that was really fun, that I could push the game in like a, just to get moving again, if we, like, even if Sharptooth was the one that made them stop and talk and go off track, that I could then redirect it and push us back into playing, and it wouldn't feel forced.
I think Sharptooth, like Brutrick is like the heart of the party just because he's so like lovable, but like Sharptooth was my favorite character. Like,
it is very hard to make a narcissistic character that is likable, and you managed to do so.
Yeah, and like, I love how he's just a slob. Like, he just sleeps in a pile of trash in his room.
Trash
again. And like him. Yeah, and like, since he's like not just a bard, he's like, oh yeah, I'm like a hair metal bard. We were able to put like a lot of cool stuff, like pyrotechnics when you attack. Like, when you do a thunder wave, it's like you slide and you do your electric guitar and meow. And it's like
flavoring up the spells to be character appropriate. Really nice. Also, seeing somebody use pyrotechnics is also great.
Because Mark, you found that audio clip. It was just like a guitar shred. So whenever Sharptooth used the Thunder Wave or any of the guitar. Yeah.
It was just a stairway to heaven.
So, Bun, what was your inspiration behind Simon? Like, what kind of character did you want to make?
I've actually played prototypes of the character previously in more homebrew sessions, where the idea is just a bookish wizard that has absolutely no in-world experience of any kind whatsoever, has basically lived his entire life inside of a library, gets kicked outside, and now it's like, what is everything? And but at the same time is such a weak little thing that just trouble seems to summon towards him. And I don't know, just go into the reading part of a wizard and just make it overblown.
Mm-hmm. It's and you played him like playing just like the nervous nerd character was made that work really well.
Yeah, I tried him out. I think he started the game as a prisoner of somebody who basically just wanted him to I think it was almost literally to do his taxes. Just like do all the like do accounting and like find be the person's indentured majordomo.
One thing that I thought was really interesting about Simon was that you purposely made him so you'd want us to cut him off, and we didn't know that for a long time, so we just kind of let you keep talking, and then eventually you told us like no, I want you to cut me off. And because we were all being too polite. And then so as soon as we knew that, we all started cutting you off a lot more, and it felt a little bit more like what you intended with that character.
Yeah, because he was probably the smarts or the the logic of the party, but he is so meek and that the moment anybody the moment he tries to say anything, nobody will notice, and they'll just talk as if he never said anything.
Happened many times.
It did. And Joey, since you're the host, I guess I will say, who did you play?
I played the Ranger Mousy Brown. He's a halfling, but he also had a alter ego of a vigilante known as the Rat King. Just dressed up like a giant rat and fought crime in the city in his spare time. And like I mentioned before, like I knew this was going to be an urban setting in like one of forgotten realms, like big cities. And being a big superhero fan, I was like, oh, maybe I should play like a Daredevil or like a Batman type, you know, who has like a alter ego, and like an unassuming alter ego, and like who what's more unassuming than the most generic looking halfling character with curly brown hair and big bushy eyebrows. And I was just looking through the this is before I had the idea of the Rat King, but I was just looking through the Ranger subclasses, and there was a one called a Swarm Keeper who could summon in the book, it's like fake creatures, and it can be basically anything you want. And I was like, so the big city, you know, rats in the sewer and all that stuff. And I just came up with the idea of the Rat King. And like, I think Ninja Turtles had a villain kind of like that called the Rat King. Mm-hmm. And
actual rat. I think that's actually called a rat. Like actual Rat Kings were like, supposed to be people who could control
rat rats. Kings. No, well, Rat King, this is gross, is rats were so densely packed in the sewers of old, like, just, you know, whatever, that all the grime and crap would just get them all stuck together. Like, their rats would, their tails would get entangled, and this mass of rats would just run around. And around the sewers, and they call it a Rat King.
Oh, okay. Oh. Isn't nature wonderful?
Well, man-made nature.
Is Mousy just a like a whole bunch of rats in a
bunch of rats. I was thinking when I first made it, I was like, oh, maybe I should talk to Mark about making him a were-rat. But I just decided not to. So that's where Mousy comes from.
That's actually a thing, because there are were-rats in the game, and you did come across one of them, and no other opportunities came up for me to introduce them in a case or any of the sort of things we did in Chapter 4. You didn't come across any other were-rats, which would have been I wasn't necessarily planning on trying to do this, but I was like, oh, this would be very interesting. Maybe they idolize the Rat King as their superhero. Like, you're fighting for rat justice or something like that. But
for rats everywhere.
For rats everywhere, but never quite came up, and I didn't get to try and roll with how that would go. I guess so, I should say that I also played a character.
All of them.
I mean, I played a character as a PC when Joey took over for a thing in level three. He DM'd, so I had brought in my character, which was going to be an old friend of Simon's, Conan the Librarian. He's a standby character that I have where he's basically a barbarian, as the name implies that he is a librarian, which means I have maxed out intelligence, and at level one, he speaks 7 languages. Playing against type, he's got the stereotypical Andy Jangerflax nerd voice that I do. And he was just there for a couple sessions, just being a barbarian, which is simple point-and-click interface, where you basically point your weapon at something and then click, i.e. swing, and see if it hits.
But, and is also sharp to his favorite NPC.
Yeah, when Conan and Simon got together, it seems like you always made a point of it, Simon and Mark, to like, whenever anyone was in Sharp, but it always seemed to be Sharptooth, that you just go on about nothing for Sharptooth. Yep. And I think at one point I took like a hit of damage, so I'd be unconscious for like the walk home from the Minimizing Mansion.
Yeah, you did. It was because I rather liked his response for when nobody was targeted whatsoever, but we were just basically just talking shop for a while when we first met him, and it's just... You were in the background just going,
the only one that like acknowledged it was happening. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that response so much. I wanted to keep trying to get it to happen again.
I do want to say that as diverse as these characters are, not like a traditional like adventuring party diverseness that you would see in like a fantasy thing.
Oh yeah.
Everybody gelled together really well in character. Like there's no like friction, like character friction there, other than like, shut up, Simon, you're talking about stuff again. Like that's the worst it would get.
Yeah. That's why I meant like with Sharptooth, where it is extremely difficult to create a narcissistic character because they have a tendency to grate on everybody or to like try to hog the limelight. But with Sharptooth, I mean, that's part of the charm, really. The difference is that he isn't trying to get everybody to think that he is the greatest. He already knows it and just assumes that everybody else does too.
And he doesn't necessarily talk down to just people. Other than like Three Strings, which is more like a rivalry sort of talk down to thing, we're just like, yeah, you know, I'm great, but that's okay. I'm just great. Some people are just better than you, you know.
So why do I need to spend the time to explain it?
Yeah.
So I mean, Waterdeep Dragon Heist, of course, it's an official module by Wizards of the Coast. After you kind of get involved with some of the city's like underground factions who are after this huge pile of embezzled gold, aka dragons. But partway through, you gain ownership of a tavern. And I think this is probably my favorite part of the game, when we were just deciding how we wanted to decorate it. Like, I think that part of the game, like, we kind of like flesh out more of our personalities just by like how, like where we, what rooms we wanted, like how we wanted to decorate the tavern. And I think that's like a lot of personality came out of that part of the game.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's one of the things, like, depending on the group, like some people are just gonna be like, no, I just want to go adventuring. I don't want to own a tavern. But the way that we're doing this on Roll 20, I'm able to just drop in assets and pictures and things, and based on what you described, and then just fill it out like that. And you're able to basically play a little bit of The Sims in Dungeons and Dragons, incorporating a couple of interesting pets and side things. Leaf, you can either basically try and kill or befriend him. And you guys decide to befriend him because having a bartender, ghost bartender, kind of cool.
Well, we did initially, at least I said, maybe we should hire a necromancer or see if we can get rid of this ghost. But then we found out that, oh, he's not so bad.
Isn't he writing, like, threatening things on the mirrors, though, at that point?
Yeah, he started out like a poltergeist where he wanted us to leave.
The way it's written in the book is basically he says, and then they only give you a couple paragraphs, like a paragraph or two on how this works, is that he initially is doing that kind of stuff to try and just scare you away. It's like, no, this is my bar. You're going to just make it worse, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to turn into a bed and breakfast. But if you, it says that if you like win him, you can win him over, and then he'll just be your bartender. Like, because he'll be like, oh, you want to open this up? Okay. Yeah. Let's get this working again. I haven't had a good bar since I died. And I'm able to write around the you find his whiskey that was stolen and he likes you for it. He thanks you for it. You learn his recipe. So you can throw in the Leaf's whiskey as like a little thing. Around like that, so it's they basically give you enough to do something with, and they expect you, especially in chapter two, to as a DM to sort of build around that. So I had a lot of fun trying to build around this kind of stuff.
What would have happened if we tried to turn it into some kind of beatnik poetry slam place?
He probably would have kept harassing you.
So after the fact, I kind of went back to chapter two, which is kind of like the most open part of the adventure. And I think since I DM'd a few sessions, we unfortunately kind of missed out on some more like slice of life bar stuff.
So,
because
I assume you're going into like the rival.
Yeah, because in the book there is a rival basically bar owner.
Yeah, so
that kind of becomes enemies. Like with the party.
Yeah. So the way this was written is that like he wanted to buy the place but was outbid by Volo. And so he's resentful for it. And he basically I've never had the chance to actually run that, to actually do stuff with it. But he basically tries to just make you all just make things worse for you. Just be a horrible, horrible sort of neighbor that's trying to, like, just slyly vandalize your place. He hires a bunch of were-rats that parade around as halflings. Yeah, that's the other thing. All the were-rats in this one are halfling rats, which would have been even better for Rat King. But he basically is supposed to do that to, he hires them to just go to be the people that you hire at your bar. And he just says, yeah, whenever nobody's looking, just do something horrible, something around that thing. But yeah. And if we went that route, I don't know exactly what I would have done. Because I would have figured like they would have found out you were the Rat King, Joey. And then would have been like, oh no, we can't do anything to this. This is the Rat King. I'm not going to do this to the Rat King.
Or maybe they think, about to say giving were-rats a bad name. I guess I don't know how that would happen. I was kind of like disappointed we didn't do that because that sounded fun.
It's yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that we didn't do that could have been interesting. Because this is such an open-ended thing. That's just how it is. Chapter four is four different counter chains, and each of them has a different thing that happens over the 10 locations that you can visit. Plus, every villain, all four of the villains in the game, have their own lair, because they could get the Stone of Galore, or you could want to investigate them, or you can continue it on after you're finished the thing just to deal with them. And you went to one of them. You went to the Seabane's Fair and looked around that. But you didn't make it to... There was no reason to get to the other ones. And switched villains, actually, halfway through, so... I want to talk about that next. So let's wrap this up and or have anybody else say what they want. I want to talk about like how the villain story progressed. So
yeah, before we go into that, like for the other people, like what were kind of your favorite part of the adventure? Do you think
for
start with yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say in the beginning, because Rat King and Mosey were separate, trying my best to try and get you to both be in the same place at the same time, just to see how you as a player would get out of it, was really fun.
Well, that's a really good Mousy disguise.
Yeah, because I also had to play with the idea where Brutrick definitely believes it's two separate people. So when I saw Rat King disguise himself as Mousy, he just had to believe that he was obviously very good at disguises, because why would that be Mousy?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's about it.
I always figured that Simon would be intelligent enough to figure it out pretty easily if he actually considered the idea. Obviously, Clark Kent is Superman if you consider the possibility of him being it. But a slight bit of absent-mindedness or like a one-track mind kind of thing. He just never really considered even thinking about who the Rat King was. Or if he even had a secret identity. He probably just did this all the time.
I love how Rat King is essentially, instead of Clark Kent being Superman, it's what if Clark Kent were Batman, but still Clark Kent?
Yeah. How about you, Sam? Like, which part of the adventure did you like the best?
I will say I also very much liked, especially at the beginning, you like tackling between Mosey and I thought that as like playing with you, I'd also kind of like skew things to mess with you a bit on purpose.
Yeah.
But
more towards like the actual adventure, like what?
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
What has stood out, do you think?
I really like the urban environment. I thought that was really neat to do. Like just how we went to like different. It wasn't like we're going to different dungeons. How we're like going into a business, and is to like I could go into a business and talk about the biggest beds ever made for a bed and breakfast. And like stuff like that. I thought that was so much fun. So I really like any dialogue based section where it's just like, okay, in this section, you're supposed to just adventure around and meet new people. Personally, I thought that was the most fun figuring out character wise. But yeah, I did.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that was it. I was like, yeah, the bed conversation was probably one of the funnier ones.
That was just me spitting random improv and hitting a bullseye. But yeah, this environment definitely the way this is written does lend itself to having a lot more social interactions than combat or exploration, which is nice when you have a group that does roleplay really well or is really into the roleplay. And that was actually a lot of fun, just trying to come up with like just characters on the fly, and when you're just talking to somebody and how they're interacting with it. Which is, I'm not an actor, not an improv actor, so I have limitations in how well I can do that and how I can remember how they act between games. So you know, it's a good way to just kind of practice myself as a DM, and it was a lot of fun.
And I think one big problem.
Go ahead.
My favorite bit was the interactions with people, like how Brutrick would end up acting like a big brother for Simon, just looking out for him when he's just kind of going along behind the other two in the group, and just helping out when necessary, trying to find any excuse possible he can to just go home. Or just like cancel the quest entirely, but gets dragged along anyway. But and I rather liked chapter two where we had to like gather stuff. It reminded me a lot of when my favorite RPGs and for video games and stuff is Baldur's Gate 2 and in others where there's a entire chapter where you basically just have to gather enough money to be able to pay for some information. And it's one of my favorite parts of the game, even though you're staying inside, you can't even leave the city. You have to stay inside of this isolated area. And it kind of hit the same notes of that, where we're not off exploring, we're just trying to survive and to scrimp and save and stuff to get what we need.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, like the fact that we did the Minimizing Mage, which isn't part of the Waterdeep module, and we got a bunch of money from that, kind of like negated the need to really do any of Chapter 2, like a lot of the side quests and stuff.
Right, and there are a couple of options that are sort of written in there and in some supplements that I have written by other people on like DMS Guild, like, hey, what if you need a loan? That way you don't have to just try and get all this money. Here's one of the characters that can give you a loan, and then you can just have that into your thing later on. You'll be able to pay it off by the end anyway if you get the gold. So, like, that's actually very interesting, is that the Chapter 2 can go on as long as you want. If you want it to just be like, we're just going to live here. You don't need to have a Chapter 2. You can just have one thing that they just have one small adventure, something they have to do, and then level them up.
We can go to Windhelm, or we can go to every other place on the map except for Windhelm.
Exactly. It's,
and like,
it also let me put like, in, go ahead, go ahead.
I'm looking at the chapter too, and it's not just stuff to do at level two, like,
right.
Like we kind of, once we got chapter three, kind of, you know, went through the adventure at that point, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like that. They had quests for level 2, 3, 4, and 5 that you can potentially do, like in between, yes. Like major events.
And I should point out for those that are not aware is that they're not really adventures or quests to do. They're more like, they're quests, but they're more, they give you basically like a paragraph or a couple of sentences on how this should be run, what needs to be done, and how it should be run, and how the resolution is done. And they're not all just like super detailed things. It's like one of them is go find a talking horse in the city. You just make a couple of rolls investigating for them. You find the horse. They give you the information, and you send it out to that. And they basically have one of those lists for every one of the major factions that you can join, including the bad ones. So you always have a good amount of fodder of what you can run in those. I took some of those and morphed them into what fit with the characters. I made up my own. I made up my own one on a couple of the occasions, or I used ones that I had made up previously and I've run before, just because, you know, they fit. Or you can just jump over and do a completely different side adventure like Minimizing Mage.
Yeah, and like some of those are probably just meant to be like a little bit of RP and then a dice roll to see if you do it, not necessarily like a 3-hour session. What was I gonna say though?
Could I say something about the Growlhoon section of the adventure?
Oh yeah.
Where we were in there and we had to make a decision whether to let someone kidnap somebody or attack him, it was very confusing of whether who was the good person, who was the bad person, and then we accidentally teamed up with the guy with the burnt face and he kidnapped the lord of the manor. And the thing I really appreciated about how it was written is that there wasn't like a right and a wrong way to do that. It's just like these are two different choices you can make, and there's probably infinite choices because people can just choose to do whatever they want, and then you just have to deal with those consequences, and it doesn't mean like negative consequences or anything. And it just created this really cool timer for us that, okay, we're affiliated with somebody who kidnapped a lord, We should probably hurry up and find everything. So it even though it's like it didn't have to, it fed really well into like the overall storyline, and it didn't feel like a punishment that we accidentally helped him kidnap a lord. So I just thought that writing was really nice.
It was a really nice way to set up a ticking clock, because if you did nothing, or if they killed Erstal, who was the guy with the bad guy that was that did the kidnapping, they would have just tried to explain things away to you anyway and try to keep things under wraps anyway, because they were doing nefarious stuff because they were trying to get the Stone of Galore. And that actually their motivations are different based on what villain you choose to. They give you a different motivation for each of those, but basically the same thing happens. But in that case, it got a little weird because I had to keep on my toes because I gave you the wrong information because I misread it. I had originally said that the person with the burnt face was the gnome, whereas the gnome was actually dead. This was one of the pursuers of the gnome, and that completely changed things. I'm like, oh god, what, let's just run. Let's see what happens. We'll just roll with it. So, I hate running that section already because there's so much crap in it. Not crap, but there's so much stuff going on in there, and it can go with so many different races, and just have so much trouble keeping on top of things. But I'm glad that it worked out so well.
I pretty much understood correctly from the start of that. I never really got the confusion because I thought you ended up saying that he was wearing the same outfit as the gnome, not that he was the gnome.
Yeah.
But then, as more stuff went on, there was more stuff to remember and stuff. So, the initial thing you said got lost.
Yeah, the actual thing was that the gnome was heading to you for protection. He was one of the people working for Lord Neverember, and he had the stone. Fireball went off, and the Erstal, the one with the burnt face, was one of his three pursuers. Took the stone and then ran off and was the survivor. And I mixed those up a little bit when I was talking, but like I said, it all worked out.
and like I said, that made a good ticking clock, because one thing, depending on your group, party motivation can be a problem sometimes with these pre-written adventures, or just any adventures, because, like, you have to move the story along. Or else, like, D&D won't happen. And one thing, as Mousy and the Rat King, since he was, like, a pursuer of justice, like, he wanted to go, you know, solve this mystery. But, like, I wasn't sure if, like, Simon, Brutrick, and Sharptooth wanted to. And like, I know probably as from a player standpoint, you're like, well, we gotta play D&D, so let's go along with it. But... that now that we had like a ticking clock and saying, oh, actually finding the Vault of Dragons will actually clear our name and we won't go to prison, like that, you know, that gave incentive to actually like do the rest of the adventure.
And that's also why I threw in the audible of Trench telling you that this was going to happen, because it was like, oh, I need a way for them to understand the stuff that they missed. And I figured Trench was a good way to do that, and we'll just say that he knows who Mousy is, and it's like, it worked out really well like that, and really set everything up.
In the anime version of this, Trench is the narrator.
Sounds just like Humphrey Bogart.
Some new folks moved into the tavern next door. A little fellow, a tall and lanky guy, and a guy that smells like trash.
He keeps yelling out of his tower.
God, I forgot about that.
The Yelling Tower. I just love in like stuff like this where just a little off, like just a random joke he made, like a Yelling Tower, like, yeah, Sharptooth, this goes to this tower, just yells, like became a part of the actual like building and what he does every morning, and became part of like the advertisement for the tavern and all that stuff.
I think it actually also story-wise affected someone was like stole. Oh, it was when the alcohol was stolen. The whiskey was stolen, and Sharptooth, because he was like standing at his yelling tower yelling at stuff, he caught a glimpse of the direction, I think.
Right, I was able to work that in. So
yeah. And I It didn't really come up much. I think I just like once or twice, but how I ended up basically, I rarely ever try to min-max my characters. I try to base them off of what the character itself would end up doing. And I figured that Sharptooth was the one deciding what my spells would be for half of it, because he wanted to use magic to advertise more and to just get his name in lights, or in this particular case, in the sky. So I felt required to get Skyrite.
Yeah.
Pyrotechnics and Skyrite, you two just seem to be taking some of the least used spells, at least in the situation like Adventurers League, where you generally do want to take a good spells. And it's so much fun to see those more flavorful ones just work. You both of you use it for a good reason too.
An unseen servant to clean the tavern.
Oh yeah, and not having knock when it really would have killed you.
It was only after in which I ended up getting more second level spells.
Right. So I did want to, before we move on, I do want to mention like two or three character moments that just for some reason just stick in my mind. One of them, I think one of my favorites, was when Simon found the necklace of fireballs and identified it, and he just froze and locked up. You played that off so well. I loved it. Another one was it was some Sharptooth that I was thinking about it not too long ago, and now I completely forgot. It'll come back to me. I'll explain it.
That time.
That thing that Sharptooth did. One of the small favorite things that Sharptooth did was when you killed the other Nimblewright, and Sharptooth was trying to like shout at the guards that were coming. He was like, "Hey, well, I'm allowed to be up on a roof. That's not a crime." And then Brutrick's like, "I grab Sharptooth and run." And then you just put in a very little line that says, "Whoops, gotta go." And I just loved that. It's just like, it's so much in character, but felt like a little, like Bugs Bunny cartoon type thing.
Well, that's the benefit of being in the same room for Sam and Steph. Like, they just play off each other a lot easier.
Yeah.
And plus, they're twins. It means their minds are synced. That's how that works, right?
No. That's how it works.
Very briefly, in the middle of this, we did run a little side adventure that's not part of the module like you mentioned. There's a module by Charmstone Games. You can find it on DM's Guild called The Mansion of the Minimizing Mage. They also just have a new adventure that they put up a couple months ago that might be fun to run sometime.
Hashtag sponsored.
But what do you guys think of that adventure, real briefly?
That was a nice. It was a nice like change of pace from the urban one, because it's an adventure that's not connected to this, so it's just a completely different setting. But it was cool how like they incorporated just the shrinking. Like you've got the shrinking tropes across like fantasy and science fiction stuff all the time, and then just kind of like your weapons are now like stuff that you found on the dining room table. You now have a knife that's basically your longsword. And when you grow back, you keep it as a giant knife. Yeah. Little like touches like that were really nice.
If your clothes shrink with you, then anything you're holding should grow with you too.
Yeah. Sam stuff, like what do you think of that adventure?
I thought it was, when I remember first doing it, I really liked playing Sharptooth as being, like, very frustrated more than, like, scared or, like, worried about what was going to happen. It was like, jeez, shrunk! Where do we go from here? Like, it was, like, I really like playing it like that, where it's more like an annoyance.
Supposed to be like sleeping, but instead I'm tiny!
And I really, like, I suppose that's another thing I really liked, aside from the minimizing thing, I know we just one of us, but in-game other people, like, voicing my character, I really liked it, because they always, every single time everyone did it, I found it very accurate to whatever he was going to do.
Like, he's such a great character, because, like, I began feeling like, if I had to write a Sharptooth novel, like, you know, the animated series, I think I could, like, I know the personality of Sharptooth, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, how everyone could input in. But for the, yeah, I liked it being, like, an annoyance. And when Mark, Joey B kept trying to be, like, giving so many hints about something is off and just constantly, like, as a player, is purposely ignoring them and not doing insights because it was in there.
If I remember right, Sharptooth didn't even want to go to the place. The only reason he agreed to it was because I ended up mentioning that there was going to be food.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
And like Amazaban was, I think that was his name, was a just a fun little villain to kind of RP as. The module describes him as this like wizard that was like who's looked down upon his entire life. So the reason why he wanted to shrink people is so he can look down on them. once that happens, he just likes to mess with them and like send cats and slimes and toys after him.
I do kind of regret that he wasn't based off Rick Moranis.
Oh god, yeah. That would've been
good. Oh, but then he would have been a great guy.
Yeah.
Or like some version of him, like use the Rick Moranis from Ghostbusters.
And I was also very impressed that they kind of made this really epic boss fight for like a level 3. You had to do the puzzle while fighting off the enemies, and also like a fully grown wizard like just using magic on you at the same time. Like I thought that was a lot of fun.
Puzzle and a fight in this economy? Yeah, it was good.
Because you have the hand floating around, trying to do stuff, and it's like, you know that boss in Kirby SNES, which is like
the master hand that
slaps you? Yeah, master hand. Against Smash Brothers.
And then the thing I really liked is it created a character arc for Brutrick, where he's like, oh, but that was such a kindly old man. He wouldn't hurt us. And then he did that. And so after then, I made it a point to do insight checks, whereas before I wouldn't have. Because I've been absolutely tricked by this really nice-looking old man, because always trying to see the good in people means a lot less insight checks. So then
except when Jarlaxle disguised himself as the thing and let you out of jail, everybody's like, oh, this must be going on for reals.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, everything was so quick. There was no time for it.
Yeah, that was a little too trusting. Because I really did think, it's like, oh, this guard is like he's like on our side. He must have some inside information. So he's gonna let us out. Maybe he's a friend of Trench or something. Like that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But turn off your Jarlaxle. That kind of leads into kind of a weakness, and this isn't against your DMing, Mark, but like I thought maybe since we switched villains halfway through, they never really got the spotlight or the story treatment that I think the book intended.
Well, so let me explain a little bit of that, because I know the book. I've run this a couple of times. So if you recall back in the original like session zero that we did, is that I had everybody, you did two things. You picked a friend at the bar, which was great for some of your backstories, really nice. And then you picked a season. And what was your character's favorite season? And we ended up being on Autumn. Autumn ended up, what the villain for Autumn was Jarlaxle. And that was going to be the setup. However, what happened when you were doing the Growlhoon Manor, because you sort of allied with them and found out some information about their little the Asmodeus sort of cults, I was like, the Castellanters work really a lot better with this. And the Castellanters are basically nobles that have like there's a whole reason why they're doing this sort of like I forget exactly what it is. It's some like a sacrificial sort of cult thing where they're trying
to... I kind of read it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I kind of read into this a little bit. It's something about how they have their like grown children or their nephews, nieces, nephews are like tieflings.
Yes.
That means they have demonic heritage.
Yeah.
And it was something about the cult was holding the kids hostage unless they, like, basically gave them an exorbitant amount of gold.
Yeah,
and, like, X amount of souls.
It's yeah, the Castlanders needed to do this to kind of, like, save their kids for whatever the reason was, probably that. So then if there's, like, it wasn't sort of, we want to screw over the city or we want to get rich or anything like that. It was, we need to do this because we care about these things that our mistakes deal, but we don't want to, you know, let that go. So they're being bad for, you know, for other different reasons. But so what happened was after that happened, I was like, let's do the Castlanders because you can go more into this information. It just fit a lot better. When you were looking for the Nimble Right soon after, you ended up finding him in the dock ward. But if you're in the dock ward and you're checking for Nimble Right, you find the ones on the ships, on Jarlaxle's ships. And so you had that whole thing where you went there first, leading you to just look. And not only did you didn't just have that dinner. Mousy went looking around and found the message about Loth and the weird things and stuff like that. Spiders, you're like, what's going on? And I'm like, this makes Jarlaxle also a good villain again. So what I ended up doing was starting it as if you were doing the Castlanders thing. And then halfway through, when the guy gets killed in the manservant gets killed in the street, I, instead of having the normal thing, which is a bunch of urchins that basically take the stone, and I was like, let's have a drow just take it, and you just fight the drow, and then it just changes hands. Jarlaxle becomes the villain again.
I always thought that the original villain was going to be the Zhentarim.
Why would you think that, though?
Because they were the ones that we ended up running into when trying to find the nobleman's son.
Right. Right. So the way it's set up is sort of like you see the other two villains are Xanathar and Manshun. Manshun is the leader of the Zhentarim, or a faction of a splinter cell of the Zhentarim, and Xanathar is the leader of the Xanathar Guild, obviously. And you have a reason to see all four villains or things from the villains throughout the game, the earlier stuff, and they're all set in stone, and you don't really do more until later on. Like, in the very first thing, if you remember that you had that mind flayer that went through a portal in the other room, and then Mousy was like, should I go through the portal? And then it closes. If he jumped through that portal, he would have gone to Xanathar's lair at level one.
Which would be bad.
Oh yeah,
I was a little surprised with that because I knew like you picked the villain, but then I learned like when we started, it's like, oh, it's Xanathar. We get beholders, but then later we was like, oh, it's not Xanathar at all. I was a little surprised that like it's not a little more consistent. Like the bad guy faction would have been the guy to kidnap Floon.
The way it's done is that the factions don't really matter until chapter four, or the villain doesn't matter until chapter four, and things can change hands based on how the DM runs it, like beforehand or even during chapter four, which is what happens. Like it seemed like a better way to switch villains and then jump back to the other villain based on what you did as players. This is the first time I actually done that, and I was trying to figure out, well, what's a good way to jump this back? Because originally, when you're in the jail cell, Jarlaxle isn't the one that comes there in disguise. It's the doppelganger. He kills the sergeant and is impersonating the sergeant. Yeah. So, and then at the end, instead of having like the cat, Jarlaxle's the only one that actually shows up as the villain at the end. The other ones send minions or henchmen or spine devils or whatnot. So it made it a more interesting thing that you got to meet him at some point, and he came back and did that. Yeah.
Yeah, she faced the villain. I just kind of thought that, like, since we kind of changed hands halfway through the ending chapters, like, didn't really feel a connection to either of them in some ways.
There sort of isn't, because it's really about, they're all just, they don't care about you. They're trying to get the stone. The stone just kind of falls in your lap. Or the situation around the stone falls in your lap. You are the outside thing that is now being forced into it. Bon, I think you were trying to say something.
Well, in that particular one, it's I did rather like how there was, it's just how often it was changing hands, how every 5 minutes an entirely different faction had their hands on it. But I was going to say, Steph wanted to say something earlier. What was that first?
I was just saying that I really like the idea of, like, it's almost like it's a roulette wheel of villains, and you're not really sure who's going to be, like, the big bad. So I thought that was really interesting, because I didn't know at the very end.
Yeah, because I did like that, how it switched hands, and it kind of linked back to that drow that we fought in the doppelganger.
Yeah. That's actually what I want to. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was like, this is really what I want to talk about, because I was really excited about how this worked. Is that when I was doing some of those chapter 3 and chapter 4 things, I realized a couple of things that you did worked as sort of like a callback. So going after the Bonnie thing, and doing that doppelganger thing was like a combination of two different side quests that you could do. And based on the roles there, it's just of how some things happen. And I had Drow was trying to attack somebody else. Let's have Drow attacking Bonnie because, Bonnie's a doppelganger. Maybe he just doesn't like doppelgangers. And so I did that. And then later on, I realized, what if those villains actually end up killing the doppelganger, which is one of the ones that you guys randomly saw going into the place, and we have that whole callback there. And I was like, this all works so well. It's all roundabout. It's like, it's like it's fate.
It's like poetry.
It's like poetry. Rhymes.
What would have happened if you picked the Bonnie doppelganger instead?
Well, I wouldn't have picked the Bonnie doppelganger, because the way it's written is that it is a doppelganger that is the manservant that you chase, and that has no connection to has no actual connection to the other doppelgangers that are mentioned. It says that Bonnie is a doppelganger that has a group of doppelgangers in the city, and at some point some people are like, you need to find out if these are trustworthy, and it turns out like Bonnie's the only trustworthy one, all the other ones aren't, and Three Strings knows about this as well. But it's like the way all that fell into just into place, I was like super happy with.
Now, so I have no complaints whatsoever for the villains and how that ended up happening, though. It's what would the setting end up probably being like if you decided to use all four factions? I'm assuming there's just four. We're basically like. We're only seeing some of it, but during chapter 2, while we're trying to find money, we keep running into either the aftermath or the dealings of like Xanathar having to battle the Zhentarim, or like their like having a turf war kind of thing between themselves, or their schemes and stuff like that running into one another as they're trying to do stuff. And then later on, they almost take turns like trying to come after us or whoever it is that has the thing.
They would need somebody with a little better world building skills
I could be the GM.
Yeah, that would have been that'd be super interesting to have the actual like villain and who has control of the stone or who is getting closer to the stone is visible to the players based on what's going on in the city. That would have been super interesting.
Yeah, I was expecting a little bit more like on the street, like gang war stuff going on, because like the Theorem and the Xanathar guild. Like I thought, like we're going at it.
You see that in the first chapter, definitely. It's the idea is to set that thing up, but it doesn't really, at least in the, because we didn't go after the Zhentarim or Xanathar, so their sort of villain stories didn't really come out since then. So
yeah, I mean, that's why I think like maybe it's just a like it would just be too much to handle, too much like, content to do. That's why I think like if Jaraxxle is supposed to be the villain, like he should have been involved chapter one.
But it could be like you basically assign one of the factions to each of the subquests or whatever it is that we end up doing to try to earn money, and then like there's a chance for one of the other factions to either show up or have a an opposing scheme or something going on, and we just basically get to most likely just escape it.
So here's the fun thing, though. Sorry, Sam and stuff. I know we're kind of taking this part over.
I'm just sitting back and listening.
Part of the fact, like I was reading through the book, and you can join the Zentherum and Jaraxxle's gang as a faction.
Yep.
They have like quest lines for Zentherum, and if you have a drow in the party, it makes it easier, but they say if you have a drow in the party, I forget the name of his group, but like they will approach you. Yeah, they will approach you about joining them. Mm-hmm. And they even have like quest lines you can do for them.
Yeah, you don't have to play more. You can play morally ambiguous or even just morally antagonizing characters in this one. There's no reason for these characters at all to be nice other than to rescue the people at the beginning. You could have played it in a way like, well, I want to get that money and keep it for myself. Which is
possible. So was the group that kidnapped Floon, was that the splinter cell of the Zentherum, or is that like the main
organization? I think that's the normal one, because the splinter cell doesn't really take on until you really get to the Manchun stuff. So like chapter 4. So that was just Zentarm versus
Xanathar.
Xanathar, yeah. It could have been, I don't remember because I didn't read too much into it, plus it was 20
because they
but
Zentarm like aren't necessarily like, oh, we're bad guys, we're out to rule the world. They're kind of like some of those influence from the shadows kind of organizations. So I wasn't sure if like it was the big, because if you look on the cover of that big Thanos looking guy is actually the other villain we haven't talked too much about.
Yeah, all the villains are on the cover there. Xanathar obviously in the back, Jarlaxle's the dude in the hat, Manchun is the one in the front there with the claw, and then the two with the masks on the side flanking Jarlaxle are the Castle Lanterns. Staring at you the whole time and nobody knew.
I was wondering who they were. I obviously could recognize Xanathar anyway. A question about their goal. Did anybody of those factions ever actually consider attuning to it, or did they simply just none of them could figure out how to use the thing? Because at least a couple of them had it for at least a few days.
So the idea is that. The villain, if they get the actual stone, because basically one person brings it to you, they die, Ursel takes it, essentially goes directly to where they're supposed to go to. You guys took like a day or two to get there. And then the Nibblewrite runs off, so nobody's supposed to have the time to just attune to it. Or maybe they're not magic users, they don't know how to. But there is a thing saying that if the villains get the Stone of Galore, for instance, if you lost, like if you all fell during that alleyway fight, the Castle Lanterns would have gotten it. They figure out where the vault is in, like, I think it's like 2d4 days or something like that. It's like up to 10 days later, giving you a different ticking clock. You now are going to have to try and find where it went, and that would have been up to me to figure out how to navigate that. But didn't come to that.
Yeah, I ended up getting a locate object purely for that possibility.
That would have been really good, yeah. I did want to talk about a couple of things that that you guys either missed or didn't get to, and I wanted to take an opportunity to answer any questions that you guys had about the storylines as well.
Yeah. So, I, Because of what's coming up, I do want to bring up a spoiler alert for anybody that does want to play it, because I don't know about the others, but I've got some questions for stuff that we didn't manage to get. And if somebody else wants to play it, maybe pause it from here.
Yeah. Although we did kind of talk about the villains and then
all that was what ifs and not really explaining what actually happens if you go by the book.
So let me start it off by going over a couple things that I want to just talk about that we didn't get to do. We talked a little bit about it before the were-rats would have been really nice. Bonnie was a doppelganger from the beginning. I am sorry it didn't come to. I was like, maybe should I make it so Rat King ends up with Bonnie, or should I just keep it that Bonnie is a doppelganger and that's not going to work out from Bonnie's point of view? But it made it a very interesting dynamic for how it worked, because the entire time you were talking to her, she was a doppelganger. Let's see, a couple things that you did miss. So you did miss a were-rat that you could have seen in Chapter 1. I made sure that you spotted him, but nobody went after him. He's in, like, this other sort of area that's a little down from where you essentially enter and come out of. Like, it's a little side area.
Now, the only person that saw him was Rat King, but he was the only person that couldn't see in darkness, and I'm pretty sure he ended up rolling a bad perception roll or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
It was some kind of a low roll where he basically lost sight.
But that would have gone back. Go ahead.
I remember that, like, it potentially he did see it, and it was up to him to tell the rest of the party, and I don't think he did.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, oh, this is this will come up again. So I made a mental note, put it on my my little like bulletin board in the room. It just never came up again naturally, so it's kind of left dangling.
It was out there in case it came across other ones, or if I needed to go into the sewer, see some more were rats, but never came up, unfortunately. I mentioned this in the last game, but to mention here, the book that Sharptooth and Simon were trying to open in the Growlhound Manor was essentially a trap. And it wasn't really like a trap. It's more like this is warding off anybody who wants to open it, not just against you. Whoever opened it would have been attacked by three ghosts that last a minute. Three of them. At level two, or level three. Basically, Simon would have died.
Actually, if I did manage to unclasp the lock, I probably would have just run away with it, because I did. There was so much stuff going on, and we were in such a. I mean, like, we're surrounded by corpses. He wasn't going to read an entire book right there.
This is true. However, you would have opened it up at some point.
Yeah, in the tavern.
Yeah.
Oh, and Leaf could have come to my rescue.
I would say that if anybody were to die, it would have been Simon, because yes. I know you're such a veteran player that you would have been able to be like, well, that just happens. And everybody else was like, I don't know if I want to kill them.
I did actually make an alternative character that as a just in case, because I wasn't. I did end up watching at least up to Chapter 2 of Arcane Arcade play it. And like by that point, Runesmith had died twice. But one of the reasons was because he split the party. But
there you go.
I figured just in case, and it was going to be like somebody from the Griffin patrols that got that basically got stripped of duty and had come to the tavern looking for work, pretty much.
Would you have been a cavalier fighter?
Possibly.
Oh, now I'm sad I didn't kill you. Cavalier fighters, for anybody who doesn't know, they're the fighter subclass that actually deals with horse jousting and stuff like that. Nobody ever plays because most things don't use horses.
Yeah, which would have come up a whole bunch.
Yeah.
or the Warmaster.
Was there any other things that you kind of missed?
You found Trench, who was a Rakshasha. I think it is. And I did. That was burning in my tongue the whole time because Bun made a joke about the tiger's eyes, going, "Oh, if he's only like a kitty person or something like that." And I was like, "Oh, I gotta save this because it is."
I specifically said, "What would they? What coincidence would it be if it was being if he was actually a Rashashka?"
great, but
called it without knowing.
And yeah, that's all I can think about that I've not discussed elsewhere. so yeah, if anybody has any questions that they really want to know, I will answer the best of my ability.
What's under the boat?
Oh, under the boat is
and the door.
It is a little
submarine.
Yes, it is a little submarine that you would have been able to get to inside that room. There is a secret passage going to that thing, this little submarine. And this was actually the backup thing, whereas if they got the stone out of jail when you were leaving jail, if you gave it to them, they would have gone to this one encounter in Mistshore, which you heard them talking about, which is basically they're waiting for a submarine to come get them. It's not that submarine. I don't think it was that one. It was, but a dragon turtle submarine actually comes up and tries to take them back to where they need to go. But you guys didn't need to go do that as the backup thing. But there is a submarine underneath the boat that was under there.
Yeah.
So like an apparition of Qualish, whatever it's called again.
It is not that, but there is one of those in the game. It is actually in Mistshores that one of the NPCs there, and it's just a rundown dock area. It's like a dock slums. There is a lady that has a apparatus of Qualish that is basically a submersible vehicle. That you could use to go see that, or sneak aboard the thing, or go find the Stone of Galore if it fell into the ocean, or go treasure hunting.
Neat.
I guess one thing, just as somebody who is kind of like newer to playing this adventure, is just the idea of like I could have literally just went out and talked to random people at any point in any part of the city, and I just never really thought of doing that because I was kind of like trying to play the main story, and I was like, oh, I could just go. And just like meet people and just see if I could find the side quests instead of them just being us.
Oh, DMs love that when they have to make up NPCs on the spot.
Would have been good practice, but yeah, more to that is that at any time, Waterdeep is a big enough city that you could have gone around looking for just about like any magic item that's not like an artifact or spells or things like that. Anything that could have just like helped you all. And you did that little bit, especially with like the glassblower's tools and things like that. But
I am surprised we never went back to the purple shop.
Oh yeah, the old Zoblob shop.
Because like the Waterdeep Dragon Heist book is not just the adventure, like it's a Waterdeep like adventure guide. Like it has a ton of stuff in there about holidays and special events and things like
right,
that.
Right. A lot of little actually sub adventures that you can throw in based on the season that you do, which we didn't get a chance to do any of those, other than the Zelefarn. That was a specific adventure.
Yeah, it is a useful tool as well for if you have your own campaign or something and you end up going to Waterdeep. The book has everything possible that you could ever want to know about the city and end up, even if just passing through, give them something to do.
And I would highly recommend anybody who wants to run this to look onto DM's Guild and pick up a thing called the Waterdeep City Encounters. It's one of like the gold branded DM's Guild ones, which I think is made by more prominent people on the site or something. But it's basically like a whole bunch of different random encounters and actual like location encounters, which we never did. I just did the random encounters based on wherever they are in the city. And with options for all of them. Excellent thing. That was my other favorite one. One of them was the snake oil salesman that you came up against early at one point. And this was my favorite thing one of the favorite things that Sharptooth did, which was that he goes over and I just had him like use the snake oil on Sharptooth and he magically illusions your hair to grow back. And he's like, look at how this made this man's hair grow back. It's amazing. And then you broke down and was like, I just fall to my knees and I'm like, oh God, I'm hideous. My beautiful and odd hair. Something like that.
Oh, no, no. You turned his skin pink.
Caucasian, it sounded like.
It was something along the lines of like you've got green skin. That's right, you've got green skin, and we'll heal the skin. And you're like, my beautiful complexion, but you basically just played it off like your ugliness was perfect.
Yeah,
I loved it.
I'm a disgusting pink now, or something like that.
And afterwards, he's like, "Oh, don't worry, it's just a trick. Here's a gold for your troubles." And you take it, you bite down the gold. Ah, worth it. And you just go back like nothing happened.
I kind of conned the con man.
I was playing the character that he was genuinely like afraid of what was happening to him.
Yeah, no, I loved it. So good.
But avarice distracted you from it.
Yes.
I think to highly recommend that. Oh yeah, DM's Guild has great supplement for like these official adventures to add a few things or make some improvements. So yeah, always check that site out if you're running one of these things. So to wrap things up a little bit, Bardu Dragon Heist, like just as an adventure, like thumbs up, you think?
I've run this one a couple times. It's got great replayability, it's got an interesting setting, and it's one of those ones that's more slightly more roleplay oriented and not dungeon running, not Mega Dungeon or anything like that. Mega Dungeon is a sequel, so I thumbs up for Waterdeep, especially if you just want a nice short 4 to 5 level adventure with even newer people to the game.
I'm always a fan of roleplay, and this seems to be one that it is not specialized to just heroes. You can be you can basically play this with any kind of party alignment possible, and is not requiring you to do roleplay. How fast it goes through is however much you want to put how much effort you want to put into it. But the fact that there is practically no railroading whatsoever in this thing, because you can go in any direction, work with anybody you want, and there's so many different varieties of things to do that without making the DM constantly have to like, okay, the entire campaign is shot, now I have to come up with something brand new to work on. Because there's always something else to pull from if they end up doing a 180 and going a different route they expected. So, thumbs up.
Sam's stuff.
Sam, this is my first Dungeons & Dragons ever. I played Scion and a really short game of Vampire before this. And I listened
Vampire
to the
Masquerade?
Yeah. And it was a very short game. It lasted like maybe 3 sessions. But I listened to the Dragonspire podcast with us previously, so I had what I was expecting was more like, and then we travel from like this part to this part, and like a lot of those like longer expeditions where I found because it was in the city and it was so localized, getting rid of all that as someone that's just starting into it was really made it less overwhelming and felt like something was always happening. It's not like you're just like, was it filler episodes of anime?
Yeah, this one can be very, very quick, especially chapters 3 to 4, which are kind of designed to go one after another. And you don't really get a breather. So
yeah, the floor fell out of under us come chapter 3.
Yeah. I mean, like some of the early 5th edition adventures, like Port of the Dragon Queen, is often criticized. That, like, it's just like you spend so much time traveling to someone point to another.
There's a thing, it's like a 60-day travel in game of you just going from one thing to Neverwinter. It's kind of ridiculous based on what we do now, but I'm sorry, we had, I believe, one more person have their opinion.
Steph?
Hey, Yeah, so again, similar as we played together, so it was Scion in that really quick Vampire the Masquerade, not Requiem, that we played. And it was a lot more fun. Like, there's just a lot of openness to silly. It can be as silly or as serious as you want to play it. I mean, it would be interesting to see what it'd be like to play as a party of, like, all more evil characters. Because, yeah, now thinking about it, like, we could have turned that tavern into, like, a place of ill-gotten goods and stuff like that. Like, realizing now, like, oh, yeah, you could have just turned that into, like, there's a illegal gambling.
Yeah, like a thieves' den or something.
Yeah. And so, like, those are, like, really neat options thinking about it now. And then being able to play Brutrick as a character, and initially I didn't really know what I was doing with him. It's just once everyone else was, like, more established, I'm just like, oh, I'm just a really big nice guy. and it was just it was nice to play that up, and then to be able to get opportunities because there were so many people around all the time that I got to do the, like, oh, I run over and help or something like that. And then I was able to get information from some people sometimes because I was interacting immediately.
Sorry. Yeah, because what I liked, like, Rat King was just trying to be sneaky, but then when that didn't work, like, Brutrick was just like, oh, I'm sorry we were sneaking around, maybe you could help us, and here, have some of this ale that I have.
You had a very good, Inigo Montoya and whatever the name of Andre did in Princess Bride. Where a stealthy and intellectual person, and then just, like, just thump, and then half the wall falls down. But as you were saying, character doesn't really have to be extremely detailed or complex or anything like that to be able to play. I mean, motivations and stuff can be, but the personality and so forth doesn't have to have an extreme amount to it to be both fun as well as likable and good to go get to work with.
Right.
And for me as a player, like, I've been DMing like the Icespire Peak and Beyond game, and it's, like, very traditional fantasy stuff, and, like, this was a nice change of pace, like, being in the urban environment and dealing a lot with, like, just everyday life for parts of it, and some of the more fantastical fantasy things, like with the Nimble Rites and all that stuff was just a lot of fun. And so thanks, Mark, for running this for, what, the third time for like, players?
Might be the fourth time? Yeah, I think it's the fourth time.
maybe the best one, though.
Yeah, honestly, you said it was the best?
This is the best I've... One of the best I've ever played. Probably, yeah, the best, I would say. This is the most enjoyable I've had.
Which one was the worst, you can tell us?
Gotta go.
Okay. Yeah. So. Yep. So. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for running this campaign with us. And it's like, I don't think anyone missed an episode. So thanks for that.
Yeah, that's right. So we had everybody here just every game. Although we had, I think we had to jump off a couple weaving into it once every week. But yeah, did a great job.
Yep. And it's a lot of fun, and now we get to decide what to do next.
Yes. So, whatever we decide to do, I figure if it's a more continuation with me running a game and the four of you playing, it would be you could choose to use these characters with whatever magic items that you've now acquired, or we'll start at basically level 5, because why go through level 1 again, with new characters and equivalent amount of magic items or something. We'll figure it out.
If it's the adventure, then we start at whatever level is appropriate, in my opinion.
And most adventures start at level 1. It's like, no, you get, there's only so many times that you want to fight a rat that could kill you with a critical hit.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'll go on level 1. yep, so Waterdeep Dragon Heist, thumbs up from all of us, I think. And definitely recommend it. Published by Mossy Brown Productions. with a forward from Volo.
Get a weekly broadsheet.
All right. Thanks everyone for doing this last session in the podcast, and we'll see you for the next adventure.
See ya.
Bye.
That's the 20s, everybody. Bye.
Yeah.
And scene.
And scene.